Good morning. It is 10:04 a.m. We are here today, July 7, 2023, via Zoom meeting for the motion hearing continuation of OPA-PA 23-002, John Dell International Inc., DBA JMI Edison versus the Guam International Airport Authority. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Joseph B. McDonald. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Tirza Bagana. Will appellant JMI please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Hearing Officer, and good morning to the OPA. This is Joshua Walsh on behalf of the appellant, JMI Edison.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GIA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. William Brennan from the Areola Law Firm for the Guam International Airport Authority. We will not have an institutional representative present today. Thank you.
Thank you. Will Interested Party Aircraft Services International Inc., DBA Menzies Aviation, please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. This is Morris Johnson from Blair Sterling Johnson and Martinez. On behalf of Interested Party Aircraft Service International Inc., DBA Menzies Aviation, we do not have an institutional representative present.
Thank you. We may proceed.
Well, good morning, councils, and thank you for meeting me today at this hearing. I look forward to a nice proceeding on what we have are motions to dismiss by GIAA and motion to dismiss by Menzies and a motion for summary judgment. And I want to go ahead and we'll just go in chronological order in logical order. Let's go ahead and take purchasing agencies' motions to dismiss, and then Menzies' motion to dismiss, and motion and Menzies' motion for summary judgment, and then I'll allow Mr. Walsh some time. And Jarek, usually the movant will have a second go at it. Is that how it goes sometimes?
Yeah.
Okay. And so the movants can have their any replies to responses from Mr. Walsh. So that being said, Mr. Johnson, thank you for Mr. Brennan, thank you for your motion to dismiss. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. I think I'll just give, because there was no hearing officer on the initial procurement in the 2021 RFP appeal. I think that some background from that appeal would be helpful to our motion to dismiss. The airport in July 2021 put out an RFP for management and infrastructure support services to its baggage conveyance systems that went through procurement process and was presented to the airport board at the end of August 2021. There were two offerors who submitted proposals in response to that underlying RFP. And that was Menzies, a party in this case, as well as JMI, the appellant in this case. JMI appealed the ranking of the offerors that was announced at that August board meeting of the airport board of directors. And that case was subsequently appealed to the Office of Public Accountability. Where that's relevant to this case is that the existing contract for management and infrastructure support services to the baggage conveyance system was set to expire at the end of October. But given that JMI had filed a protest on the underlying RFP, GIA determined that these services were so critical to airport operations that any interruption in the services constituted an emergency situation, which required GIA to, or which prompted GIA, I should say, to determine the need for an emergency procurement. That need for emergency procurement was certified, and the governor approved a certificate of emergency at the end of October, right? And that procurement was awarded to Menzies on a competitive basis. And you have the records in the procurement record submitted underlying this case. And that was in October of 2021, Mr. Hearing Officer. I think that's really critical. The determination of emergency was, I believe, the 26th, the certificate of emergency, the 27th, and the new contract was November 1st. And that was after the expiration of the underlying contract that was entered into several years ago. So with that emergency, the way GIA defined that emergency in its determination as approved by the governor was the imminent interruption of services caused by the procurement stay on the underlying RFP constitutes an emergency situation necessitating an emergency procurement. That was GIA's determination. The governor of Guam approved that determination and a certificate of emergency in declaring that as the basis of emergency, right? So that's critical, because we can't look at this emergency procurement in a vacuum. Essentially, we're saying, the airport is saying, because of the stay imposed, these services are so critical, interruption in these services presented a threat to public health, safety, and welfare at the airport, right? For the traveling public, the airport's patrons, and the need to move goods in and out of the airport in a secure manner using the technology available through these services. Okay. Now, what happened after is that under the procurement code, for any extension beyond the 90-day period, the airport must have a public hearing. Okay. So because the contract was entered at the end of October 2021, the statute requires that the public hearing be held no later than 30 days before the 90th day. So essentially within 60 days of the determination of need for an emergency. So at the end of December, the airport intended to hold a public hearing. This is December 2021. And this is critical, Mr. Hearing Officer. The airport is required to publish notice. That notice must identify the contract, must identify the contractor, must give the reason for the extension. Now, if you look at the procurement record, and we cited it in our brief, it's actually in the reply brief, but we cite to page 530 of the procurement record, because in that document is the airport's notification to the public via media advertisement that lays out all of the details of this procurement, all of the facts, right? The airport declared the existence of an emergency due to the procurement stay. Because the procurement stay remains in place, the airport intends to extend the contract beyond the first 90-day period. Because the procurement stay remains in place, Menzies will continue to perform under the terms and conditions of the November 1 contract. And finally, the contract remains limited in scope to the emergency, right? To the need to respond to the emergency. That's what's in that newspaper ad at page 530 of the procurement record. And you may ask why this is important, why this newspaper ad in December 2021 is critical. Well, it's because, as we cited on page 794 and 795 of the procurement record, Mr. Eddie Lau, a principal of JMI, the appellant in this case, sent that newspaper advertisement that was published in the newspaper in December 2021. He sent that to the contractor's license board related to his complaint, that's related to the underlying procurement appeal. I think that's all I need to say. I'm sure Mr. Walsh can get more into the detail. But essentially, in sending that newspaper advertisement, that makes it indisputable that as of that date, Mr. Elau, and, you know, by virtue of his position as an officer, JMI knew the airport used an emergency procurement as of December 2021. The airport used an emergency procurement because of the stay imposed by the underlying RFP. The airport used that emergency procurement and awarded a contract to Menzies to provide certain services, right? This is all as of the end of December 2021. And finally, the airport intended to extend the contract that was entered into on November 1, 2021 for more than a 90-day period because of the procurement stay in place. Now, that sets the stage for this motion to dismiss, because JMI then filed a protest in March of 2023 after, I believe, six subsequent public hearings. The airport noticed in the media, as required by the procurement code, to extend the contract for 90-day periods at a time, up to 90-day periods at a time. In JMI's protest, it's, to me, it's a little bit vague as to what the basis they protest on, right? And I think that's purposeful. Because under Guam law, under the Teleguam case that we've cited to and the DFS case, because they knew as of December 2021, those facts that I've just highlighted, the 4 points that are in the newspaper ad the airport published, their protest must have been brought within 14 days from that date in December 2021, at least. We think it may have been earlier, that we could prove that they should have known earlier. But as far as it's new or should have known, we can demonstrate actual knowledge on behalf of Mr. Elau as of that date in December 2021, when he emailed the then director of the Guam Contractors License Board. Now, this is critical, because if you look at the Teleguam case, if you look at the DFS case, what the Supreme Court did is it looked at each part of a protest that was subsequently appealed to the OPA and then to the Superior Court, or for DFS directly to the Superior Court. And even though the merits of parts of the protests were addressed in those appeals, what the Supreme Court said was, but these parts that were not timely raised, there is no jurisdiction to address these points, so they should never have been included in the procurement appeal scheme that's set out in the procurement code. And that's what we raised before you today. If I could just flip our motion on its head and just say, if we are correct that JMI knew of those 4 points, I think we make them 3 points, but just for ease of, you know, understanding the argument. If JMI knew, as of December 2021, the airport used an emergency procurement, that procurement was awarded to Menzies despite JMI's allegation of a license issue. The airport was extending it beyond 90 days, and the reason for the procurement and the scope of the emergency was the imminent interruption due to the procurement stay. If those four facts should have been raised in December 2021, and the OPA finds that, you know, those are the facts that were known as of that date, there is nothing left in the March 2023 protest because there are no new facts separate from those four raised. For those reasons, Mr. Hearing Officer, I don't want to get too much into the cases unless you have questions. We think that the OPA lacks jurisdiction over the specific issues raised by JMI, at least as to those issues that we highlighted in the December 2021 email. And for those purposes, we ask the OPA to dismiss this appeal as untimely and therefore due to a lack of subject matter jurisdiction as laid out in the authorities we've cited in our brief. Unless you have any questions, I'll defer to other counsel and we'll make my response later.
I don't have any questions off of that, your opening argument. And I guess let's go ahead and just have Mr. Walsh briefly respond.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. I just a procedural suggestion, but I'll go anywhere you want to go. I think Menzies as well joined the motion to dismiss on that portion. So I don't know if it makes sense for me to make a response and then Mr. Johnson makes a response and I make a response again, or
let's go ahead and go if there's anything different that Mr. Johnson is going to add on his on the joinder on the motion to dismiss. But I also believe, was it just a joinder or is it a separate motion to dismiss that you're going to argue a basis on? You're muted out, Mr. Johnson.
I don't really have much to add in addition to what Mr. Brennan said. I mean, it's a pretty simple argument. It's protest filed after the 14-day period after a party should have either knew or should have known about the basis for their protest or can't be considered. Supreme Court has made it very clear. It's a jurisdictional question, and we just humbly ask that the public auditor humbly understand that it has no jurisdiction over a protest that has been filed 14 days after a party knew or should have known. And I think, as Mr. Brennan pointed out, it's very clear that Mr. Elau, who's the president of JMI, knew about the facts giving rise to this protest in 2021, which is clearly more than 14 days before the date that the protest was filed. And aside from that, unless you have any questions, I don't really have anything else to add.
Okay. Mr. Walsh, it's yours now.
Yep, thank you. Fairly well briefed, Mr. Hearing Officer. I just want to make a few points. The OPA has jurisdiction if the protest to the OPA is timely. The agency's position is that if the protest is untimely to us at the agency, in our view, then the OPA has no jurisdiction to weigh in on that. But the only real question on timeliness for a jurisdictional analysis, Mr. Hearing Officer, is whether the appeal from the agency to you was made in a timely manner. Of course, size of OPA jurisdiction, you can, in the merits of our appeal, ultimately say, you know what, Josh, JMI was wrong and they were untimely in the effect in denying your agency level protest. And there's nothing there to do because you were untimely from the beginning. But, you know, the real question is, were we matter from the agency's denial of the protest to you at the OPA level so that the OPA can exercise its statutory jurisdiction to either, as we hope, confirm that the airport was wrong in its denial, or as the airport would hope, to say that the airport was fine in saying that. But And we know it has to be that way, because if you look at the United States Supreme Court's decision in Steel Company that we briefed, if you don't have jurisdiction, you don't weigh into any of this. You simply announce there's no jurisdiction. Josh, you were untimely to the OPA. There's nothing we can do. Statutorily, I'm barred as the OPA level for making a decision. So I do understand the airport's position that we were untimely, that JMI was untimely in this protest. Therefore, there's nothing to do. But there's no debate that we filed the appeal to the OPA level within the statutory timeframe, meaning that you have jurisdiction to weigh in on that. Ultimately, the OPA could weigh in and say, the public auditor's office could say, the airport was right, you were untimely, but that's a merits decision on because you certainly have jurisdiction to act on the timely appeal to this level. Judge Elise McDonald already weighed in on this argument that the airport made in the case before her. We briefed that. It's not simply enough to say, you know, the appellant could have known these facts or these facts are known. What are the facts that trigger the aggrievement that the party is raising? And in that case, the judge said, look, there's jurisdiction. Because the facts that you're stringing together as JMI didn't get known to you until you filed your protest within the 14 days you had to of the facts known there. Here, the airport says, you know, we knew everything in December 2021. There are no new facts, I think was a good argument that Mr. Brennan made. Day that are any, or when we made the protest that were not known in 2021. The airport, three of the key facts, the first one being the passage of time. The appeal that was raised to the airport involves a new fact, the fact that we're past emergency procurement. And, you know, I'm not trying to be dense here, but you can't make an argument about the passage of 500 days on an emergency procurement in December of 2021, because there haven't been 500 days that have gone by. So, again, in the exercise of jurisdiction, the OPA could say, you know, that's a silly argument. Of course, you can have an emergency that lasts for 500 days. But that's an exercise of jurisdiction on the merits. The other things that are facts that we point out that are different than the December 21 situation are the citations. That didn't exist in December 2021. And our agency was brought within 14 days of getting that. And the citation that was issued by the CLB finally to Menzies. So influence of those issues, the citation, the AG opinion, the AG being saying these guys can't responsibly perform, and the passage of time to a point where we just think you can't have a procurement, that's a procurement emergency after 500 days. That's why the protest to the airport at that time. But ultimately, Mr. Hearing Officer, our position is none of that matters. The analysis of your exercise of jurisdiction is whether or not our appeal to the OPA was timely. In the exercise of that jurisdiction, you could say everything that Mr. Brennan said was right. But that requires us getting to the hearing on the merits and then getting an administrative decision on the merits of whether or not the airport was correct on saying JMI was untimely. But jurisdictionally, we should get over this hump and get to the merits. And unless you've got any particular questions for me, Mr. McDonald, I'll leave it at that in our brief on the motion to dismiss.
Okay, we'll just go ahead and give Mr. Brennan a chance on any reply.
Yeah, I just have a couple points to respond to. I think I think there is something to be said about efficiency, at least in the way these arguments are being presented. If every timeliness question and jurisdictional matter has to be addressed at a hearing on the merits, you're going to have a boundless hearing, right? Where it's not just the merits of the protest claims and whether we're just weighing whether the AG's opinion or whether the citation was valid, right? That's kind of Menzies' motion for summary judgment, in our opinion. That's how those issues can come into play. But it's not uncommon for a court or an administrative body to address jurisdictional questions that may be dispositive to a case to sort out the whole case. And so there is, you know, in citing, for example, some of the authorities on how the The hearing officer in this case can address informal matters and questions of law and other issues brought before it in, you know, pre-merits hearings. We'd suggest to you that addressing your jurisdiction, whether that's a procedural jurisdictional question from the timeline between the agency decision and a protest to the OPA, or what we believe is a substantive question of law of the 14-day knew or should have known requirement in the procurement code itself, and whether that gives jurisdiction to the entire following procurement scheme. What's interesting about JMI's argument is I think it comes down to framing. If they're going to say it's a passage of time issue that we're appealing, that's really, in our view, looking at the scope of the emergency. If we said since October 2021, this procurement and this contract is in place because of the procurement stay, and as of December, we will extend it so long as the procurement stay remains in place on the underlying RFP, it matters not whether it's 91 days, 2 days, or however long it takes the Superior Court to address the decision. The fact is the emergency was certified. The airport believes, and it's been, you know, we followed the law to a T on this, I think. The airport did. The airport limited the contract to the scope of the emergency. It determined a need for emergency procurement for, which is what the procurement code requires. So they may say it's a passage of time issue. We would counter it's a scope of the contract issue. And since we've alleged, since we've determined, the airport has determined the scope of the emergency is the procurement stay, however long that remains in effect, that is the time. And that was acceptable in December 2021. So what JMI is essentially saying is the emergency could have been anything less than 500 days. We're not going to say it specifically, but Mr. Hearing Officer, you should know 500 days is too much. And we think that's just not enough. And we don't think that's a merits question. That's really, did we follow the law question? And so in that regard, we think that's a framing issue. And we don't think that, that kind of semantic positioning is enough to invoke or defeat your jurisdiction. Really, it has to be looked at, was the law followed? And interestingly, in their opposition, they concede that an emergency could be longer than 90 days. So we'd suggest that as long as the emergency remains limited to the scope of the emergency itself, it's acceptable under the procurement code based on their argument. As to the citation issue to Menzies, if they're going to bring up the Superior Court case, I would just point out that's the exact opposite of what they argued in that case in the underlying appeal. Initially, they said, Superior Court, OPA, you don't have to wait for the CLB to act. You should go in and weigh these questions yourself. Now they're saying this is some critical fact that extended the timeline for them to protest in this case because they were waiting for the CLB decision. If they're going to cite to that decision, they can't use it as both the sword and the shield. If the position they took in the other case was you can act, you don't have to wait for the CLB, we've raised this protest timely, then in this case, they shouldn't have had to wait for the CLB, and that shouldn't change the 14 days from when they knew or should have known. If they were already alleging in 2021 that a license was needed, their protest in March 2023, regardless of what happened in between, by reason of their admission that they don't have to wait for the CLB, means that 14 days started since they knew a license, since they allege a license was required. I think I'll just close on this. If the OPA is just going to look at its jurisdiction in a 14-day timeline from agency decision, I think that flies in the face of the Supreme Court's decisions in Teleguam and DFS. The Supreme Court didn't say, we're going to address all the merits, and one of the merits arguments is the timeliness requirement. They addressed timeliness up front, and when they found that portions of the protests weren't timely, they remanded immediately on those issues. They didn't say, but in addition to that, let's weigh the merits, let's have an entire merits hearing at the Supreme Court. We just don't think the OPA has the resources to have a merits hearing on every case where there's an untimely protest. If you can, dispositively say, in this case, it's pretty indisputable when Mr. Elau knew and thus when JMI knew, if there the answer to that dispositive question resolves everything, there's no need to address the merits. We're prepared to, just to be clear, but why go that far if this issue would resolve all pending questions? So with that, thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer.
Very good. Just a couple of questions on your motion. And this one actually is directed to Mr. Walsh. I'm looking at 5073C of the procurement code. And it states, Notwithstanding 5425 of the chapter, no prior determination shall be final or conclusive on the public auditor. How does that square with your statement that so long as you're timely to the public auditor, that that we don't have any basis to decide on whether or not it was timely in the first instance on a protest?
Sorry, I don't understand the question. Ask me that again.
5073C of the code says that notwithstanding 5425, no prior determination shall be final or conclusive on the public auditor or upon any appeal from the public auditor. In your argument, you stated that so long as it's timely to the public auditor, then that's how this should go, and it shouldn't go on the basis of it may have been untimely in a protest in the first instance. In other words, you know, taking the argument from Mr. Brennan that, and I believe I'm terrible about remembering verbatim Supreme Court opinions, but I think it said something to the effect of at every stage of a procurement matter, there needs to be an evaluation of jurisdiction. Because really what we're talking about, aren't we, is exhaustion of administrative remedies. And that exhaustion has to accrue at every stage. So how does that square with your argument that I can't, the OPA can't touch it? You know, it doesn't make sense. I'm just...
So if I said the OPA can't touch it, I completely misspoke. You are imbued with the authority to flip the airport or confirm the airport. But that's because the public auditor's office has the jurisdiction to hear this matter. The argument that's being made by the airport is that since the airport determined in its decision that we were untimely, that at this stage of the proceedings, you should not say that. Their argument is you have no jurisdiction to weigh in on this. That is different than a summary judgment motion that says, again, I don't think you can have a summary judgment motion or a decision on the merits of the case that the protest was untimely, therefore there was nothing to do about. So my point conforms completely with what you just mentioned, because I'm saying the OPA can weigh into this. The airport's asking the OPA to say, well, there's no jurisdiction here for me to operate on the OPA level, whereas the OPA completely has jurisdiction to operate because the protest appeal was timely from the agency. And then as a merits decision, not a jurisdictional, I don't have jurisdiction, say in a merits proceeding that, well, you were untimely from the beginning, so there's no relief we can give you. I don't have any jurisdiction to give you any relief on the grounds of being untimely to the airport. But that is something that, you know, in DFS, we got a distinguishing characteristic there. The OPA level was skipped altogether. We went right to proceedings at the Superior Court where you actually had testimony and litigation and argument, right? And then when the Supreme Court says we disagreed with what Judge Barcinas did on several things, it got remanded back to the court for action. It wasn't that the court has no ability to take any action. So my argument is you completely can revisit or uphold or flip what the airport determined on whether or not there was timeliness to do anything here. But that requires an exercise of jurisdiction at your level, right? It requires the OPA to say, I'm going to exercise my jurisdiction in this case to say you lose JMI. What the airport's doing here is skipping that administrative process step, which is let's take the arguments on and I'll make a decision on whether or not the airport's denial of the protest was correct or not. Here, the airport wants you to say, I don't have jurisdiction to make that decision because of this misreading that seems to be going on at Teleguam and DFS. Because the Guam Supreme Court said there's no jurisdiction to provide relief, therefore there's no jurisdiction to hear the case. That's not what those cases stand for. The statutory authority from the legislature of Guam to the OPA is, if somebody comes to you within 14 days, 15 days, I think it is, right? 14 days or 15 days, you can review the matter. So all JMI wants is its review of the matter and a decision, not an exercise of limited jurisdiction for the OPA to say, I don't even have the ability to review the matter, Josh, because you were untimely to the airport. We need an administrative decision. And if I could just add one other thing to that, that I looked at the OPA webpage. I mean, I think there's like six protests. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not exactly the docket filled to the brim where we cannot take the time to do these proceedings. So the idea that we need to streamline everything, you know, find interesting and novel ways to jettison appellants so that we can just skip to the merits without getting to the merits, I don't think is what the statutory scheme is. So you can obviously revisit everything. You make the decisions, but that's an exercise of jurisdiction.
Okay. Now, I want to just get into real quick on GIA's argument about actual knowledge. Mm-hmm. And this is directed to Mr. Brennan. You're saying, is your argument then that the publication of a intent to extend the emergency beyond the period in statute, the mere publication is sufficient to put a protest on?
So a couple of things, right? The publication of the intent to extend, that's one piece of what was published. You know, the publication also said Menzies was awarded, the contract date, emergency procurement was the method of source selection used by the airport, and the scope of the emergency. As to those four, anybody who reads that publication, I would argue, yes, that is actual knowledge. As to the intent piece, JMI, and we cited this in our motion, we didn't have to put in our reply because it wasn't addressed, but in JMI's appeal in February on the underlying procurement, in their verified complaint, they confirmed that Menzies continued to perform, meaning that they had actual knowledge. So as to the intent to extend, that wouldn't give actual knowledge of the extension itself, I guess is how I'd put it. But here, because Mr. Elau sent that document in December 2021, as to those other parts, the method of source selection, who was awarded, the date it was awarded, and the scope of the emergency, yes, we would posit in this case, because he sent that email, and they don't dispute he sent that email, that is actual knowledge. And as of February 2022, in their verified complaint, he had actual knowledge that Menzies continued to perform. Sorry, boss, still in here. Sorry. Sorry about that. <It's> other matters.
I'm surprised you didn't look up and say yes.
Oh, no. Partner calls. But no, just sorry. So as to your question, I see the distinction you're making, and I hope I've answered it sufficiently.
Okay.
Mr. Hearing, yes. I want to make clear about it. We don't contest that fact. JMI knew that Menzies is operating under an emergency procurement scheme from originally in October 2021 and onward. I mean, I don't want that to be there's not a debate about that fact. We know that. And our complaint does say it exactly as Mr. Brennan does.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, any statements you want to make on this before I allow you to address your own motions?
Sure. There's just one point that I'd like to make, piggybacking on the first question that you asked, Mr. Walsh. And I'd just like to direct your attention to 2 GAR Division 4, Section 12104C9, which addresses jurisdiction of the public auditor. And if I may just read it briefly, it says, any objection or motion addressed to the jurisdiction of the public auditor shall be promptly filed. The public auditor shall have the right to raise the issue of her or his jurisdiction sua sponte at any time and shall do so by an appropriate order. So we don't have to go all the way to a hearing to address the issue of your jurisdiction. And I don't think the question is whether you can review or the jurisdiction of the, or you have a right to a province to get into the jurisdiction of the question of whether or not the airport had jurisdiction over this. It's jurisdiction flows all the way from the bottom all the way to the top here. So you have a right to review that question of jurisdiction by the airport. As you mentioned, you're not bound by any decisions, prior jurisdictions by the agency. So you have the right, and I think the responsibility under 2 GAR Division 4, Section 12-104C9, to actually address a motion that's brought in front of you to address your jurisdiction, based on whether or not the agency originally had jurisdiction to address this in the first place.
Thank you for that.
And if you're taking, sorry, if you're taking answers to your first question, I was, I didn't say this in my initial argument, but if, you know, if you look at the purpose of a motion too, it's not just to, you know, address the whole case. A jurisdictional motion could also narrow the issues at the merits hearing itself. So it's not as if, you know, GMI couldn't, if there was still something left in their protest, even if, you know, you found it, they were untimely on the facts we've alleged, at least we would have a narrower hearing. It wouldn't be this, you know, huge review of, this, you know, as they put it, you know, 500 days of emergency and all the things the airport did in that period. At least we would narrow the issues available for appeal and focus on the issues that jurisdictionally there is no question. But, you know, that's just all I would say on that. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, the floor is yours for your motions.
Okay. I don't have anything to add with respect to the motion to dismiss. It's just basically the same arguments that we had previously, I believe, with the airports. With respect to the motion for summary judgment, and piggybacking on what Mr. Brennan just said, again, going back to the authority of the hearing officer, under 2 GAR Division 4, Section 12109A, the hearing officer has the power, among other things, to hold informal conferences to settle, simplify, or fix the issues in a proceeding. And that's really the reason why we brought up this issue, the issues that we raised in our motion for summary judgment. I think the clearest and, I guess, most important issue here is that JMI has in the past and has continued to raise the claim that we are not licensed. I mean, that may have been the case before. However, as we provided, maybe not completely in our motion, but at least completely in our reply, we have been licensed by the CLB since, I believe, April. So we do have a C-13 license. We did obtain one under our objection because we still don't believe we're required to have one. However, if their argument really is that we're required to have a C-13 license and that we don't have a C-13 license, I mean, I think we've proven clearly here by providing copies of the licenses issued by the CLB that we do have a license. This type of license. And so I think that should at least limit that issue. So I just at least request, I guess, whatever judicial notice the hearing officer can provide to show that we at least have a license to do this. And so the airport providing us with the emergency procurement to do this type of work, even using the argument that they raised and even using their argument that a C-13 license is required to do baggage handling, which we still dispute, really it kind of moots the primary issue before the public auditor. And I don't really see if there's a need to proceed with the hearing if we're just going to at least accept the fact that we have a license that's been issued by the Contractors Licensing Board, which JMI seems to say is required.
Okay. Is that all you put up on your motion for summary judgment?
There's other factors, but I mean, I'll rest on the motion unless you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask me based on the other factors that were presented.
Okay. Mr. Walsh, please, your response.
Yeah, but thank you, Mr. McDonald. I agree that, I mean, the matter is pretty well briefed, and I think the issue, I mean, I understand, of course, why Menzies brings it. You know, if somebody's raised a protest because of a lack of a license and somebody says, I have the license, that seems to be dispositive in the protest. I certainly understand why the motion's granted, but it's not that simple. So first thing I'd like to say is that, you know, if you're weighing into a motion for summary judgment, that means the OPA can exercise jurisdiction on the appeal, which means there's a appellate jurisdiction at the OPA level, right? So, you know, if there's no jurisdiction, Steel Company tells us you just announce that and you quit. If you're going to weigh into a summary judgment motion, that means there is jurisdiction. So I think that's an important. You know, we pointed out the prior cases from the OPA where the public auditor said, look, there's no summary judgment procedure here. There's no Rule 56. You know, if you were going to incline to grant summary judgment, you know, I just put a couple things on the record here is that discovery processes, you know, we once upon in other cases that people have attempted to get discovery, the public auditor, Mr. Cruz, has said no discovery. We'll get that at the hearing on the merits. So, you know, we're sort of vacillating back and forth between I'm getting summary judgment without discovery. but the intent in prior decisions of the OPA was that's what the administrative hearing's for. You know, what's the standard? You know, how would we do this? Does this streamline the procedures? I suppose if a summary judgment rule existed in the standard and you sort of had a put up or shut up moment early in an administrative process, but we don't have that process. So I'm not sure that we really can proceed here. And even if an MSJ can happen, we brief this. I don't need you could review the fact that we've had problems saying that we have questions about that license. The license and the procurement record dovetail with each other because that second license, I haven't seen it in the first license, the one need two licenses, one for the RME and one for the company. Licenses is not in the procurement record, which you've taken back. How could you have had a complete procurement record and made the emergency procurement? The airport has an record with the new license. So I don't know how that works for the next iteration of the emergency procurement. And also,
Josh, you come in. I don't know if it's just me, but you're coming in and out on my end.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're a little broken up.
Sure. I will go slow and tell my law partners to stop Fortniting. sorry. Or Call of Duty, one or the other. And just sort of on, I think that auditor's office does look at the questions we raise in our opposition about, you know, is this RME actually an RME of the company who fulfills the requirements of an RME under the statute? Thing that would get developed with testimony from the CLB and the airport's procurement officers over their lack of communications with this RME. Is this person really the person who's in charge? The procurement record doesn't really have his name other than in the flyers that he's attached to. He's not involved in communications. But again, that's all things that we would develop at a hearing on the merits with witnesses. So look, if it's as simple as Josh, you protested the fact that Menzies doesn't have a license and they're now showing a license. I'm not saying those documents are fake. Those documents were submitted. I got them. I see that they're stamped and they're signed. How those documents came to be, the meaning of those documents, do they really match the requirements of the RME? Were they issued in violation of the CLB protocol? Those are things we would develop to say why that's not dispositive. But to sort of do it at this point in the proceedings in a standardless, regulationless summary judgment proceeding that we're kind of winging with no accepted standard, we don't think is the way to go. Thank you.
Okay. Reply by Mr. Johnson.
Just to follow up on the last part of it, I mean, the basis for this protest, as I understand it, was that we did not have a license and that we could not perform. The basis was not that we were provided a license through some sort of underhanded means or that our license was invalid. It was simply that we don't have a license. So I'm not sure that question is really before the board as to whether or not there's something amiss over at the CLB in terms of how they're issuing their licenses. We simply addressed the main issue that was put before the public auditor in terms of this protest, which is that we don't have a license, by simply showing that we do in fact have a license, regardless of whether or not we even believe that we do need a license to do this work. So again, going back to GAR Division 4, 12109A, it's fully within the power of the hearing officer, whether it's done as a motion for summary judgment or in some other, framed in some other way, the authority still rests with the hearing officer to settle, simplify, or fix issues in a proceeding before the hearing. And I think it would be in everybody's favor, at least in order to recognize that we do in fact have a license here going into this hearing. Because again, I guess the reason why I framed it as a motion for summary judgment is a motion for summary judgment has multiple purposes, not simply to completely dispose of a case or to be completely dispositive, but also to simplify the issues going into a hearing or going into a trial. Going into a trial, if you're looking at the civil rules, which is basically essentially what the purpose here is under 12109A, which is to settle, simplify, or fix issues in order to simplify the issues that need to be addressed at a hearing in front of the OPA. So that's simply all we're asking the public auditor to do.
And for the real anal lawyers, maybe it's a motion under 2GAR Div 4, 12106 to simplify issues so that we don't get into whether or not there is no genuine issue of material fact, and the movement is entitled to summary judgment.
May I add one? When Mr. Johnson's completed, if I just have one moment.
I'm done.
I just wanted to point out that about our position about the need for examination of the acquisition of those licenses and the providence of those licenses and wanting to get into that at the OPA level. One of the reasons we're making that argument is the public auditor sort of got into that in the previous iteration of this case and ultimately dismissed JMI because of the public auditor's analysis of the way the CLB was issuing documents. So we are being consistent. Our position is that should be explored at a hearing, not in a summary proceeding, how the CLB issues what it issues, in this case, the licenses. And then the other small thing is Mr. Johnson's right. We are absolutely protesting what we thought was understood to be a lack of license, but it's also a lack of a license to perform the emergency. Those are two key aspects, right? It's not just that Menzies doesn't have a license. That's the last protest. It's Menzies doesn't have a license when it responded to this emergency procurement. And now that they flash a license, we're not sure that actually checks all the boxes on a responsive bid. But that's hearing on the merits on the motions. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Brennan, any comment on the motion for summary judgment?
Sure. We didn't join the motion. I think Mr. Walsh summarized pretty well that it may have defeated our argument on jurisdiction if we made, merits arguments at the motion phase. The only thing I think we're going to add, just based on what Mr. Walsh last said, is what we've been maintaining before the OPA in the other case and now in this case, is that it would be difficult to have sort of a hybrid CLB procurement hearing. And perhaps that's why simplifying these issues would help if we do reach the merits, is we intend to object, as we did in the underlying procurement, that if this is going to turn into a CLB and how the CLB does its business, that really is an extra procurement, in our view, an extra procurement scheme issue. And I'll just put on the record now that the procurement scheme goes to the appropriateness of procurement, and the remedies are designed to address issues in the procurement scheme. The CLB has issued a penalty for performance that they've alleged was wrong or incorrect. And so I just don't know how we're going to proceed to that. And I wonder if that should weigh on the motion to dismiss for the reasons we've put forward in the other case. Thank you.
Did Mr. Brennan just volunteer to help draft the regulations for new summary judgment procedures and our GAR procedures? I'll help.
it's all sui generis, right? Very well argued, gentlemen. Thank you so much. If anybody else wants to make any statements now, we'll take them. Otherwise, it's going under advisement, and it's a lot to pour through to get to where we need to come to a disposition on these motions.
The only thing I'd ask is, in the event that we survive these motions, that we have another scheduling conference to set whatever remaining dates are before the OPA sets new dates, just as I'm sure you can imagine, Mr. Hearing Officer, August, September, all those dates are really getting filled for everybody as the Superior Court keeps setting things. So I think just if you could bring us all back, if we survive, to set new dates. Obviously, if we don't survive, make the decision, but conference,
I'd agree with that. I have no objection to that. If we do go to the merits, I think we will need to rehash the dates just based on what's happened since the last hearing to today in terms of my schedule.
Okay. And I assume Mr. Johnson's on board with all of that.
Yeah, I don't have any objection to that.
Okay, so memory serves, we did put up a hearing date, didn't we?
Yes.
Okay, so what you're asking is to come back. Probably you want to come back after any decision, should a decision not be adverse to JMI, to just to tee up the dates one more time as a final true into the home stretch.
That's right. And I think to Mr. Johnson's point, like if, for instance, if issues, for instance, if, you know, if the public auditor feels that there is a, these issues will go, these issues won't go, I do think it's good to get back together just to talk schedule, because maybe the amount of hearing dates or length of hearings, I'm not trying to get another billing event. I'm just trying to find a few minutes to talk schedule just to make sure we're all good whenever your decision comes out, Mr. McDonald.
You guys are no fair, because I can only bill what you bill as administrative hearing officers. what's that?
I mean, I was going to say something like, well, they should get judge paid, but.
Okay. I think that's a very good idea. I'm not saying that there won't be hearings on the final hearing for a penultimate to a decision. But I think it's a good idea that we at least true up one more time heading in. What are you suggesting? Why don't we do it this way? Once a decision gets issued, right? Let's set it now. Let's set it now. What's the date, Jarek?
So currently, based on the last order, the first filing deadline for the hearing materials is not till July 31st. So I would assume a decision would definitely be issued well before the end of the month. And then the brief hearing briefs deadline is August 4th, and the hearing date is August 7th. So,
okay. So,
is it possible to come back just that week before the July 31 documents deadline?
Yeah, you guys are. So I know that Mr. Brennan has a daughter. Mr. Walsh, do you have a daughter?
Actually, no. I got a niece.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, do you have a daughter? Okay, so I'm wrapped around these little fingers.
I got it.
And they made me buy Taylor Swift tickets.
Oh.
In July. So there's a lot of pressure for me to put this up and done by the 31st, but I think I can do it. Let's come back.
Actually, Mr. McDonald, I know I made the suggestion, but how about, I think the gentleman on the Zoom call, we could work constructively with each other. How about when you issue your decision, if one of us feels there's a need to adjust dates or revisit dates, we'll just reach out to the other folks and either try to get a joint stipulation into you to review, or if there's nothing to do, then we won't do anything. That way we don't need the hearing. If these gentlemen will doing that, and I know they will, then, you know, if we need to do something, we'll work together on stip on dates. If we can't sort it out, we'll approach you. If we can sort it out, we'll do it.
Fair enough. All right, so we'll leave it as it is. I want to thank you, councils, again for your arguments today, and look forward to continuing on with this case, whether it's a dispositive or not at this stage. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy Taylor Swift.
Tay Tay.
Thank you. We're off the record at 10:58 a.m.